So whenever, you know, his disciples would go out anywhere or hold a function, or they were going out to preach, Prabhupada would always remind them that prasadam distribution was one of the primary functions of the Krishna consciousness movement. Chant, dance, take prasadam, and bas. No need to talk until people become a little purified. So similarly then, September the 6th, 1976, Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. And some of his disciples were just about to head out to Turkey, the country of Turkey. And Prabhupada was in his back garden in Vrindavan. Those of you that have been to the Vrindavan temple, you'll know that there's a nice garden there in the back of Prabhupada's quarters. So he used to go and sit there in the evenings. Charanaravindam from London, he had built a lotus pond during the summertime when Prabhupada was away in America. And he had a nice fountain in the middle of that. And he also, he built a seat against the back wall with a little thatched roof above it, and Prabhupada was coming out and sitting on that seat. He would put the fountain on and he would sit there and chant. So sometimes devotees would come into the back garden and chat with him. So this particular evening then, these devotees that were heading out to Turkey the next day, they came to get his blessings. So Prabhupada leaned back easily on the bolsters, bead bag in his hand, chanting the Maha Mantra softly on his beads. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, I have got all encouragement, he told them. You go and preach. Don't be afraid. You simply present Yaradeka Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh. That whatever you have learned from Krishna and from your guru, just vomit it. That's all. Prabhupada had a unique way of using the English language. Very expressive and graphic. So, whatever you have learned from Krishna and guru, just vomit it. There is no need of becoming very expert. Simply whatever you have learned, that's all. Harikesh Maharaj suggested that the main thing was to do lots of kirtan and prasadam. Prabhupada smiled and he agreed. He asked his disciples if they knew how to cook. He was impressed with the long list of preparations that Charanaravindam detailed, because he wasn't going to Turkey though. Vipramukhya, who was going to Turkey, confessed that he didn't know how to make very many things, but he did know how to make sweet rice. Prabhupada grinned. Oh, that is very sweet for you. Europeans and Americans, they like sweet rice, is it not? So we laughingly acknowledged that we did, along with halava. Prabhupada nodded in satisfaction and gave us some advice on how to cook and serve correctly. So you prepare all these things, he said. You offer to Krishna and the devotees, and at the last you take. Don't take first. You give all, as much as you like, then you take. Shushukam kartam avyayam. It is such a nice movement. It is simply pleasing. To execute, it is simply pleasing. And avyayam. Whatever you do is permanent. Whatever little service that you have given, it will never be lost. Avyayam. Therefore, Narada Muni says, sorry. Somebody get me some paper towels. Therefore, Narada Muni says, Bhajana Pakvota Patetuto Yadi. Even if he is not fully matured and he falls down, Kwava Bhadram Abuddha Musyakim, where is the loss? Whatever he has done, that is a permanent gain, because it will grow. If the seed is permanently sown, then it will naturally grow. It may take some time, but it will grow. So he is not the loser. If he's a little careful, then it will grow. Mali Hana Sai Bija Kari Aropana. Shravana Kirtana Jali Kariye. Then the creeper grows, and at last it takes shelter of Krishna. This is all described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Vipramukha asked, when we prepare a feast, we should give and give and give. And when no one wants any more, then we should take. Prabhupada laughed in agreement. Up until he comes to this point, he said, gesturing with his hands and bringing it up to his throat. Not only this point, but up to this point, he brought his hand up to the top of his head. Eat as much as you like. We are not miser. You eat as much as you want. I shall supply. But don't waste. Eat it. Don't waste it. Arikesh and I began to laugh, not just at Prabhupada's mannerisms, but at the irony of what he had just said. This morning, I reminded him, you were saying that fasting is very good. So Prabhupada laughed with us, but he explained, no, not prasadam. I never said. No, those who want to eat, fasting, one who has not developed Krishna consciousness, then for him, fasting. And anyone who takes pleasure, oh, this is Krishna's pleasure, or Krishna's food, I'll take. So that is the idea. So we are not devotees, and therefore we should first fast. And those who are devotees, they can take as much as they like. I was telling fasting because I am not a devotee. This is Srila Prabhupada. So just in case you were thinking that you've just got a license there for eating as much as you like. Yeah, first of all, you have to come up to the standard of being a devotee that Prabhupada was. And even he's saying, I was saying I should fast because I'm not a devotee. So for me, fasting is good. If I eat more, atyahara means over. I suggested that we could appreciate Krishna prasadam without filling ourselves up to the neck. But Prabhupada maintained his liberal mood. Yes, it is for the devotee. A devotee can eat. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was eating, Govinda, his servant, he was complaining. Sir, so many things are lying here and everybody asks whether Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taken my preparation. Oh yes, he has taken, so I have to speak so many lies. You don't take, so what can I do? So he said, alright, you bring it. Bring it all. Then he began to eat, for 100 men's foodstuffs stopped. And he finished. And then he asked, any more? So now only the bags are there, everything is finished. So he ate everything, one after another, one after another, one after another. Alright, you bring. So he can eat, but we cannot. So if you're as good as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you can eat large amounts. Otherwise, we don't have the capacity. Yeah. I remember in the early days in Sydney, we were just reminiscing about that at the weekend. That, when we first joined, of course, we had been used to a life of sense gratification, and then suddenly joining the temple, now everything was restricted. So it was a little difficult. And the one sense gratification that we had was eating prasadam. Yeah. So we used to eat rather voraciously. And we had a fellow called Bernard. You remember Bernard? He was a young man. He had actually been roaming around Sydney looking for some Christian monks. And instead he came across the devotees in the street. He thought they were monks and he wanted to be a monk. And so he came back to the temple and he joined. He didn't really know a lot. And he was not really suited to a monk's life. he stuck it out for about a year or so, I think. And then eventually he left. But one of his pastimes was that he was so voracious that in the middle of the night he would get up and he would break into the kitchen. And there was a cupboard there where they kept the sweets that were to be, the freshly made sweets that were to be offered to the deities for Mangalarati. So they would lock that up, and he would break into the kitchen, and he would break into the cupboard, and he would devour all the boga that was meant for the deities. And Sukala was telling me that later on he went to New Zealand, and he was doing the same thing there. So one time she made all the sweets with cayenne pepper, and you know, and she put them in the cupboard. He came, he ate them all. That seemed to cure him of his habit. And I remember one Sunday, because we were escalating every week, we would eat more and more and more. There was, you know, no limit. And Bernard, one week, he had 13 bowls of halva, not small bowls like these little katuris, big serving bowls. 13 bowls of halva at one Sunday feast, and he stashed another 6 bowls for the next morning. So everybody had their stashes. We used to hide them in different places. Just more or less the opposite of what Prabhupada was saying there, that you serve everybody as much as they can take, and then at the end you have. So in those days the system was that the servers, they would make 3 or 4 plates for themselves, yeah, and then they would stash them here and there, different spots. Chiru, he had a stash. He would reach out the window and he would put it on the guttering, on the roof, and then in the morning he would reach up and bring it down again. So we were quite voracious, and I remember one Sunday I reached my, you know, maximum capacity level. I had 6 plates of prasadam, and these were not small plates, these were big plates. So I had 6 plates of prasadam, and afterwards I got such severe indigestion that I actually thought I might die. I can laugh about it now, but I wasn't laughing then. I got such a severe pain in my abdomen, I really thought if it gets any worse, I'm just going to collapse and die. And I had to go and lie down. So after that, then, you know, I cut back to 3 plates a week. 3 plates on the feast. So anyway, when you're young, you can do things like that. But not when you get older. Sunday feasting. There was another issue that came up. Because the idea of, you know, having a lot of prasadam on a Sunday feast, Prabhupada encouraged it. He realized that the devotees, you know, you need some kind of enjoyment, and the tongue is the main instrument, you know, for enjoying. And so at least he made that provision that on a Sunday everybody should sit and have some sumptuous prasadam. When he came in April of 72, I'd been in the temple about 6 weeks at that time in Sydney. And we developed this system. You know, we would go out in the mornings for about 3 or 4 hours chanting on the streets in Sydney. Then we would come back for lunch. We had the big double-decker bus that had just been put into commission at the end of February, and we would come back, and then the ladies would make this very sumptuous prasadam, you know, all kinds of sabjis and rice and chapatis and bread rolls and sweets. So we would, you know, stock up on that, and then we would go out again for another 3 or 4 hours chanting again. When Prabhupada came, he saw what we were eating during the week, and he said, "This is too opulent." Yeah? He said it should just be rice, dal, and chapatis. So, you know, naturally we cut back on Prabhupada's order, but everybody was a bit morose. But Prabhupada said, on a Sunday, then you can have opulent prasadam as much as you like. So, 75 May 23rd, this was just after the opening of this temple. Prabhupada was here in Melbourne, and we were on a morning walk. So I brought this topic up Prabhupada had been speaking about controlling the tongue, for vibrating and for tasting. If you can't control your tongue, then you can't make any spiritual advancement. So I asked him, I said, you were speaking about controlling the tongue, that it is very important. And in your lectures, you have said that simply by eating prasadam, this is controlling the tongue. But still, we have the tendency, when there is a big feast, to eat very much prasadam. Is that a good thing? So it seemed a little contradictory that you have to control the tongue. Just by the act of eating prasadam, that is control of the tongue. You don't eat anything other than Krishna prasadam. But still, we used to eat so much. So I was wondering, is that a good thing or not? Prabhupada laughed. He said, it is not very good, but it is still good. Instead of going to the restaurant and eat like hogs and dogs, you better take more prasadam. So there is no harm. Krishna bada doyamai kari bada jiva join. Krishna is so kind. Just to conquer over our tongue, he has given us this nice variety of prasadam. So you take it and control your tongue. So it's not good. It's not very good, but it's good. As long as you're eating Krishna prasadam. Okay, so that's a little bit about taking prasadam. There was one other issue that came up, actually. It's not written here, but I'll mention it. After we opened the temple here, we used to use what's now the deity room. That was originally the first prasadam hall. So we would all go there for breakfast. And especially on a Monday morning, there was so much prasadam that was left over from the Sunday feast. So in 1975, the Chaitanya Charitamrita came out. And we read in there about the offenses to prasadam or charanamrita. If you throw it away or if you disrespect it, then you get many lifetimes of leprosy, or your whole family becomes ruined, and there's warnings in there. So when Madhavisa Swami at that time, he was the GBC, when he read all of this stuff, he decided that we could no longer throw out the prasadam that was left over from the Sunday feast. And he wasn't talking about just the prasadam that was left in the pots that was unserved. He was talking about the prasadam that was left on the plates by the visitors. So visitors, sometimes they would come, we would give them a full plate, and they weren't used to the diet, or they didn't, it was too sweet or this and that, so they would leave a lot of stuff. So normally what we did was collect up all the used plates, and the prasadam would be, put into bins, and then we would take it out and dump it somewhere. In Sydney, we used to go out to the Gap, where the Sydney Heads are there. We would crawl out onto a ledge, and then we would dump whole 44-gallon drums of prasadam from the Sunday feast into the ocean, so that the fish could at least eat it. When that got a bit too risky, we started burying it in the back garden. So here in Melbourne, it was just left in the bins, and then the dustbin men would come and they would take it away. So it was a concern, this is prasadam. So anyway, because of what we read in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhavisa decided that we couldn't dump the used prasadam anymore. And so he told the devotees, now you put it on to scrape it off the plates onto trays, and then you keep it for the next morning, and then everybody can eat it for breakfast. Yeah. So it was controversial. Some devotees were thinking, okay, it's prasadam, no problem. Other devotees were thinking, yeah, the food is prasadam, but the saliva and all the other stuff that's been left on it by the karmis is not. So they didn't want to take it. So it was, upsetting some devotees. It was controversial. That was all that we were given for breakfast on a Monday morning. So, anyway, just after that, I left Australia and I went to live in the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada came after a few weeks for Janmashtami, and he stayed through Radhashtami. So I remember going into Prabhupada's room for a darshan, and Prabhupada had an incredible memory. I mean, he had thousands of disciples at that time, but as soon as he saw me, he asked me, "So how is everything in Australia?" I was just one face in the crowd, but he knew that I was from Australia, he remembered. And so I said, "Everything's fine," but I had this question on my mind about the prasadam. So I asked him, I explained the situation, so I said, "What's the, you know, the proper move for that?" The Prabhupada thought about it, and then he said, "It depends on your consciousness." He said, "If the person's in the consciousness that it's alright, it's prasadam, then that's fine. And if they don't want to take it, that's also fine." So he said, "It's up to the devotee to decide. It depends on their level of appreciation and consciousness." So, anyway, if you're very elevated, like Raghunath Das, when he was living in Jagannath Puri, you know, he got down to the point where he was fasting so severely, he was just collecting the rotten rice that was swept out from the kitchens in the Jagannath Puri temple through the drains, and he would catch that, he would wash it off, so all the that, you know, that was really the rice that was left after the cows had rejected it. First of all, it was fed to the cows. Whatever was left after the cows had finished with it was all rotten. So there would be one, you know, tiny little kernel in the middle of the rice grain there. So he would collect all the rotten rice and wash it all off, and whatever was left, that small kernel, he would collect that, and then he would grind it up and he would eat it. And that was his austerity. So if you are as advanced as Raghunath Das Goswami, then you could do something like that, but otherwise it's not recommended. So you have to practice Krishna consciousness according to the level of your realization. And if it's done sincerely, then you make advancement. You know? What's the standard for one kind of devotee may not be the standard for another. A Mahabhagwat can do things, you know, just like, who was it, Bhamsi Das Babaji or Gokishore Das Babaji. Sometimes they would just simply reach down, pick up a fistful of earth and eat it, and then they would continue on with their service. So if we tried to do that, we would probably die very quickly. Yeah. So we have to, you know, act according to the level of our consciousness, but at the same time be striving for improvement to a better level. Okay, so that's a little bit about taking prasadam. Now we'll have a look at cooking for Prabhupada. Yeah? Different aspects of cooking. And of course, Prabhupada's first cook was his mother. So sometimes Prabhupada would talk about his mother and you know, how she used to cook various things for him. May 19th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Honolulu. We had gone there for 1 month. Prabhupada went there specifically so that he could increase his writing. The BBT at that time had practically caught up with Srila Prabhupada's output. Previously in 1975, Prabhupada had gone to Los Angeles, where the BBT had just relocated, and he was very disturbed to find that there was material for about 17 volumes of books, most of the Chaitanya Charitamrita and a couple of a few editions of the Bhagavatam were simply sitting there, and the BBT's pace of publication was so slow that, you know, they had this huge backlog. And Prabhupada told the devotees that he was feeling discouraged from doing any writing. Just close the either he goes in or he stays out. He was disturbed that they weren't keeping pace with him, and he told them that he felt discouraged from writing because they weren't publishing, you know, in time with his writing. So he told them, he said, now I'm going to be here for 2 months, May and June. And by the time I leave, I want all 17 volumes published, printed, in 2 months. So, you know, they said, but Prabhupada, that's impossible. And Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So that was it. They went on this marathon. Rameshwara Swami, Rameshwara Das Brahmachari at that time, and Radha Balaba, the production manager, they immediately left the morning walk even before Prabhupada had finished. They went back to the temple, they called all the BBT devotees, and they told them, now we're going to go on a 24-hour work schedule, 3 shifts, and we're going to work flat out until we get all these books published before Prabhupada leaves. And they actually did it. By the time Prabhupada left at the end of June, I think at least 15 or 16 volumes had actually been completed and printed and were being distributed. So it was an amazing feat. And so in 1976, Rameshwar had come and reported to Srila Prabhupada that now the BBT is practically caught up with you, writing. When you give us enough material for a book, we will have it in production, in print, within 6 weeks of receiving it. So it was a kind of a challenge. And Prabhupada liked that. He said, oh, very good. So they suggested, now if you go on the way to America, if you go to Hawaii for 1 month, then you can increase your writing, because you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, nobody else is there. There'll be no, you know, managerial problems, no visitors for Darshan, etc. So that will give you the opportunity to write more. So Prabhupada liked that. And when we went to Hawaii, we stayed for a month, and he increased his output by about 6 or 7 times what he normally did. So it was very, very productive. Anyway, so we were in Hawaii, and I was giving Srila Prabhupada his massage. There's a very nice house there that Ambarish Prabhu purchased for the ISKCON temple. It's up in the hills. And on the, what do you have? You have ground and first floor here, right? Yeah, ground and first. Yeah, not first and second, ground and first. Anyway, in America, it's first and second. So on the second floor, your first floor. Prabhupada had a nice room, and leading off from that, there was a carport, and above the carport they'd made a veranda, and Prabhupada, like a sun deck. So Prabhupada was having his massage out on the sun deck. So during Prabhupada's massage, which he took out on the sun deck, he recounted to me some of the names that he had been given in his childhood. One relative had called him Govardhan, which later became shortened to Goba. So you know what is the meaning? He asked, and then he answered himself with a laugh. Cow dung. Another name was Moti, which means fool. And yet another was the name for a male cat. He was also called Kachuri Muka, or Kachuri Face, because he loved to eat kachuris. So Prabhupada just kind of, he must have just been thinking about it, he just told me that. So later on, in February of 1977, we were back in Mayapur, and Prabhupada at that time was not very well. He was very weak, and this was just right before he got very seriously ill at the festival. He was not able to attend, and really from that point on his health went completely deteriorated, and he didn't recover it. But anyway, this particular evening, February the 26th, we were in the Lotus building. Prabhupada's rooms were on the second floor, and he liked to sit out on the veranda there. So this evening he was sat on his asana with the lights very low out on the veranda. Tamal Krishna Goswami, forgiving myself, the present. I gave him some medicine that he is taking for his kidney, and he pulled a face because it was bitter. He laughed, and then he told us that as a child it would take three men to hold him down to give him medicine. Sometimes when I was angry, he said, I would take these hookers and smash them on the ground. You know, hookers, the big pipes. So apparently his father had them in the house. So Trivikram Maharaj, who had also come in by this time, asked whether his mother would try to stop him. Prabhupada grinned. Then I would take another one and break that one as well. Just then one of the ladies brought some kachuris from the kitchen that he had asked for. He told us that he was very fond of kachuris, so much so that his friends used to call him Kachuri Muka. And they would keep him constantly supplied. It was so well known that whenever he would visit a friend, they would have a supply kept waiting, especially just for him. So he used to, when he was a small boy, he used to have a vest like the one I'm wearing now. And of course they had top pockets and, you know, lower pockets and inside pockets. So he would, his mother would fill up his pockets with kachuris. Right? So when he went out, he would always have a kachuri with him. So whenever, you'll see, whenever Prabhupada suggested to the devotees that they should cook sumptuously, then he would always say, you know, kachuris, puris, halava, samosa. These were his favorite foodstuffs. So August the 2nd, 1976, in New Mayapur, this is in France, I showed Srila Prabhupada a gift that had been sent from Penang. Penang is in Malaysia. I was just there a couple of weeks ago. We're building a very big temple there, an amazing place. So Prabhupada had actually gone there in 1971. Sorry, no competition allowed. So, Prabhupada reminisced about his stay at the house of an Indian gentleman there. His wife made very nice kachuris, he smiled. So that was one of the things that he remembered. They had asked, what do you want to eat? So if you can, you can make first class kachuris. So that is from my childhood. My friends, they also did it. They'd make first-class kachuris in my youthhood. I'm fond of kachuri. Kachuri is made first-class in Agra and Mathura. Very, very nice. The kachuri is being made, and hundreds of customers are waiting. So the shops, there are many shops, so they're waiting for the purchasing. And as soon as it comes out from the pan, immediately it is sold, and there is no question of waiting. So they make the spice the nicest. That is India's craftsmanship. So kachuris Prabhupada particularly liked. So sometimes I get questions from devotees on Prabhupada's, or the lead up to Prabhupada's appearance day or his disappearance day. What did Prabhupada like to eat? So kachuris, of course, is, you know, first on the list. There are many other things that Prabhupada liked. One other preparation. December the 13th, 1976, we were at the Hyderabad farm, and during his massage, Prabhupada called an Arundhati onto the veranda. She was Pradyumna's wife, and he instructed her how to make a Bengali preparation called Bati Chachari. Any Bengalis here? You can make? Yeah. Bati Chachari. As she returned to the kitchen, he told me that his mother used to make it for him every day before he went to school. He chuckled, I liked it so much that I only wanted this. And so Bati Chachari is another preparation. And Shukta was another one that Prabhupada liked. Yeah. That Neem Begum. Yeah, you know more. Alright, so you can train everybody up. Yeah. For Prabhupada's next appearance day, you can train all the ladies. They have to cook all the Bati Chachari. Okay, so that was Prabhupada's mother. That's a few things. Because I will say that this seminar is not meant to present every single thing that Prabhupada ever said on the topic that's being discussed. I'm just taking things that I personally heard Prabhupada say during the period when I was traveling with him, It's just meant to give you a synopsis, you know, a glimpse of, you know, the topic. So, apart from Prabhupada's mother, one of his other cooks was his sister, who we used to call Pishima, auntie. So she liked to cook. All the Bengali ladies, they're all expert in cooking. Yeah, they're well known. Of course, everywhere in India, all the ladies are expert in cooking. But in Bengal especially, they like to cook and feed you. So Prabhupada's sister, Babatarini, she was very eager for him, to cook for him, always. And she would insist on it. And especially, you know, when we started the Mayapur project, the building went up there, and then she would always insist on coming to Mayapur and cooking for Srila Prabhupada. Palika used to tell us stories about sometimes they would have fights with her because she wanted to cook in, you know, her particular way. And of course, you know, Prabhupada's digestion was quite delicate, and Prabhupada would privately tell Palika and the other cooks, you know, don't let my sister cook, or let her cook, but you cook, you know, something that I can eat. So, you know, he had his own cook because he had to have a regular standard of prasadam, and he would adjust it according to the condition of his digestion. But Pishima, she would just cook, you know, the regular stuff. And especially in Bengal, they cook in mustard oil, very heavy, not ghee, sometimes in ghee, but mustard oil, yeah, it's very common. And it's very difficult to digest unless you're used to it. So there was always this thing going on with Pishima about her cooking. So in 1976, we went out to Mayapur on January the 17th. Pishima came in another car with us, and she insisted on cooking for Srila Prabhupada every day. So on February the 27th, this is about a month or so later, Prabhupada is not feeling well, yet he continues to receive visitors and take his walks. On top of a bad cold, he now has uremia again, so he's not taking rice. His sister, who is still staying here, insists on cooking for him, but he complains that she's using too much chili and ghee, or sometimes heavy doses of mustard oil, which causes him digestive problems. So 2 days later, February the 29th, Prabhupada refused to allow Pishima to cook for him anymore. After eating her lunch yesterday, he became ill, and he had to take rest at 8 p.m. He called her in and he told her that she had to return to Calcutta. So he sent me to call his sister, and she came. And I was in the habit of always sitting in Prabhupada's room, you know, whenever he had a visitor, just to be on call if Prabhupada needed anything. Plus, I was always very keen, you know, to see what was going on and to learn, you know, from Prabhupada's dealings with the various devotees. So I was always in Prabhupada's room. In fact, that was the first instruction that Prabhupada gave me when I became his servant in Vrindavan in December of 75, the first day that I kind of moved into his quarters. After lunch, he'd gone up on the roof. There was a small varsity, a room up there, and Prabhupada entered in there, and he turned and he pointed to a straw mat that was just outside the door on the veranda. He said, "Now you sit here, I'm going to take rest." He said, "Now your only business is to be with me 24 hours. So that was my first instruction, and I took that as seriously as I could. So I was always in Prabhupada's room. And so similarly, when Pishima came in, I was sitting in the corner. But the exchange was really something. I mean, I'd never seen anything like it. I'd never seen Prabhupada, you know, deal with his sister. And when he got her in the room, he roasted her. I was just sitting there, not saying anything. So he told her, and he told her, "Now you have to go back to Calcutta." And they were speaking in Bengali, but I knew what was going on. So she began to argue with him. Then Prabhupada started shouting at her in Bengali, and she became upset and she began to cry. He was telling her to go and she was refusing. Finally, she got up in tears and left the room. They have a very special transcendental relationship. Apart from being Prabhupada's sister, she even looks like him. Pishyama is also an initiated disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and a great devotee of Lord Krishna. As he relaxed on his asana afterwards, he told me that she should simply stay in Calcutta and look after their childhood deities. He shook his head and he began laughing. She has some idea of travelling with me. She thinks I'm her brother. This is the problem. Right? She thinks that I'm her brother. That's the problem. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, not because it changed him as a person, but to get away from this family. Generally, the family members, they don't take instruction. I was the same person before taking sannyas as after. I took sannyas for this reason. Otherwise, I could have done the same things without it. So that was it. Fishman was actually sent off back to Calcutta. And then again, we came back to Mayapur the following year. In February, and this was on February the 7th. So again, Pishyama came out with the party from Calcutta with Palika and Shruti Rupa. Shruti Rupa was another lady devotee that was also cooking for Srila Prabhupada. And again, they had the same game going on. Sometimes Palika would go into the kitchen early and then lock the door so that they couldn't get in, so that she would cook and they wouldn't be able to cook. So there was this whole thing going on. And Prabhupada, you know, he would be telling the girls, no, you cook like this, you know, can't let my sister do that. And there's a whole leela that was going on there. Anyway, that was the general mood, but then that changed. October the 13th, 1977, because that was the last, Prabhupada went there for the last time for the month of October and 2 weeks of November, and that was where he performed his disappearance pastimes. So we had taken Srila Prabhupada on the 1st or 2nd of October from Bombay by train to Vrindavan. And about mid-October, October the 13th, Prabhupada's sister had heard that he'd gone back to Vrindavan and that he may leave. So she came by train from Calcutta to see him. She arrived on October the 12th, and Prabhupada the next day called for his sister and he spoke to her in Bengali. He said, "Sometime in the past, I heard that you were not allowed in the room. So if there is any offence, I want you to forgive me." And then he talked to Bhakti Charu Maharaj, who was standing there. He said, "Apart from being my sister, she is my god sister. She took Harinam Diksha from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. If we make any offence upon any Vaishnava, it is not good. So you please ask her to forgive me. I am only taking juice, but I would like to eat something. Today I'm going to eat something, some solid food. It doesn't matter whether it does good to me or bad to me. Nothing can be worse than this." So at that point, Prabhupada had not been taking any solids for at least 2 months. And, you know, he's physically, he was literally skin and bone. So, because his sister came, he just decided to honor her by eating whatever she cooked, although he hadn't taken anything for several months. So he said, "She is a Vaishnavi, it will be good for me." Probably I became a little puffed up because of my opulence and success. Now God has shattered that pride. If you don't have your body, then what is there to be puffed up about? So back to Charu Maharaj, he said, "But Srila Prabhupada, whatever you've done for Krishna." Prabhupada said, "That may be, but in this world, unknowingly you commit offences. You can't ever commit offences," Bhakti Charu said. "You are God's dear one. How can you commit offences?" The Prabhupada said, "I'm a little temperamental person. Often I use words like rascal. So I never compromised. They used to call it Kurul Nye Prachar, preaching with a pickaxe. Kurul in one hand and the Bhagavatam in the other. So that is how I preached. Anyway, you make all the arrangements for her. So Pishima was very happy, and she cooked this big meal in the standard way, with all the ghee and mustard oil and everything else. Prabhupada ate the whole thing, just because it was his sister. So a couple of days later, October 17th, 1977, Dr. Ghosh, now he was an old friend of Srila Prabhupada's from his days in Allahabad when he had the Prayag pharmacy. So this doctor used to come and, buy his medicines, and, I guess Prabhupada was fulfilling the prescriptions that he gave. So they were good friends. So he had come once or twice previously to visit Srila Prabhupada. He had retired, I think in 1976. There was some suggestion that he might start a free clinic for treating the devotees at the Krishna Balaram Mandir. Prabhupada was trying to, he was trying to engage him in devotional service. Because he was a bit mundane, he didn't really understand the philosophy. But as Prabhupada, often used to tell us, practically everybody in India is a devotee. You've just got to kind of uncover it somewhat. So he was something of a devotee, and Prabhupada wanted to try to do some good for him before he died. So he was encouraging him to start this clinic. So in 1977, when Prabhupada returned to Vrindavan for the last time, word was sent out to Dr. Ghosh, and he immediately came to see if he could treat him. So Dr. Ghosh stated that Prabhupada's stomach and liver were all right, but he stressed that he should eat more and drink lots of liquids. Prabhupada's sister cooked fried eggplant, fried portals, puddies, yogurt blended with figs, apricots, raisins, papaya and coconut milk blended with avocado. And Prabhupada ate very heartily. So... I mean, it was impossible for him to digest anything at that point, but because his sister did it, he ate the whole lot. So, okay, so that's Pishima. When I joined Prabhupada's party, I actually couldn't cook. And when I left Prabhupada's party, I still couldn't cook. I think I was the only personal servant that Prabhupada had that didn't know how to cook. It was miraculous how I stayed on the party for so long, actually, considering my lack of qualifications. But somehow or another we got by, and Prabhupada, he was not disturbed by it. So anyway, when I first joined the party, Hari Kesh was transcribing Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavatam translations, and he was also Prabhupada's regular cook, and he was quite expert. So that was late November when I came on the party. Then by early February, 3 months later, then 2 months later, Hari Kesh persuaded Srila Prabhupada that he should take sannyas. So he was given sannyas on February the 5th, and then that meant that he would have to go out preaching. So he was sent off, and he had taken sannyas with a devotee from, I think he was Venezuelan, South America, I think he was Venezuelan, Viraha. He became Viraha Prakash Swami. Hari Kesh became Hari Kesh Swami, and then they were sent off immediately to go and preach. So before leaving, then Hari Kesh wrote down on three sheets of paper how to cook for Srila Prabhupada. So the two new swamis left for Calcutta this morning. This is February 6th. Hari Kesh is going to the USA via London. I gave him my quilted cotton jacket, a Bhagalbandi from Vrindavan, because he had no clothes for colder climates. Before he left, he gave me a 3-page handwritten list of instructions on how to cook for Srila Prabhupada. I kept that's in the archives now. So Prabhupada had this cooker. I'm not going to read out the whole thing because it gets a little bit technical. But basically, Prabhupada had this cooker. It was like a pressure cooker made from brass, and it was lined with tin on the inside. Every year that, you know, we had to get it re-lined because it would wear out. And inside it, then in the middle section, there was, there were three sections, and in the middle section, the bottom, there were holes in the bottom of it, so that steam could come up from the bottom section, and similarly with the top section. And then there were these other like katoris or these cups, and so in the bottom section you put dal, in the middle section we put the rice, and then in the top section we would put chopped up vegetables. And then the trick was to cook that in half an hour. So when Shrutakirti was with Prabhupada, he was very expert at that. He would have it all set up before the massage. Then he would do Prabhupada's massage for about half an hour. Then he would run into the kitchen, switch on the cooker, put it on the right flame, and then go back, finish the massage. Prabhupada would go and take his bath. Shrutakirti would run back in the kitchen, take the cooker off the flame. By that time the dal was cooked, the rice was steamed, the vegetables were nice and soft. And then he would then spice everything. He would chaunce the dal, because the rice remained as it was. And then the vegetables, he would divide them up. And then generally the standard was to make two dry sabjis and two wet sabjis. Then if there were some sweets that had been made separately, they could be added as well. Little sandesh. And then chapatis, that was made on the spot in the dawa system. Prabhupada would, when he started eating, he would ring the bell, and Harikesh would throw a chapati on the flames, and it would puff up, and then we would put it on a plate, and then we would run in and drop that on Prabhupada's plate. So that was one of the first services that I had, actually, when I joined the party. Harikesh was cooking on a little bucket stove. Yeah, those of you from India, you may have even used them at different times. Little, you know, iron bucket with a hole in the side and lined with clay. So he was, and filled with charcoal. And so he was cooking on there. And he would throw the chapati on, and then, you know, when it puffed up, then he would drop it on a plate. Then I would run into Prabhupada's room, offer my obeisances, drop it on his plate. And Prabhupada would, he would prod it with his second finger, the longer finger. What's that? Is that the ring finger, that one? Huh? This, anyway, the index, not the index finger, that's the first one. The second finger. He would prod it, and then, you know, just burst it, and the steam would come out, and he would flatten it, and then, you know, he would eat with that. So, anyway, that was the system, and using the cooker. And Harikesh, actually, before he left, he had been trying to teach me how to use it. And Prabhupada had, you know, approved of me going down into the kitchen in the mornings and trying to get the hang of using this cooker. But it was actually more difficult to use than it looked. I remember one morning in Mayapur, at that time also Harikesh had been very, very sick. He got colitis, so some mornings he was, you know, so sick he couldn't get out of bed practically. And he was coming out at like 11 o'clock in the morning just to get down into the kitchen and do the cooking. So one morning he was very late, and I was down there trying to learn from him. And then, you know, I was watching the clock. It got to 1:30, which was Prabhupada's lunchtime. And it seemed like things were just, you know, almost ready. So I was watching the clock and I was thinking that, you know, should I go upstairs and tell Prabhupada we're going to be a little bit late? But no, then, you know, it's nearly ready, just another minute. So I was kind of caught in two minds. And, you know, Super Soul was trying to tell me, go upstairs and let Prabhupada know. And I was ignoring him. And the end result was that after about 5 or 10 minutes of being overdue, Anakadundabi. He was a British devotee that was living in Mayapur. He came flying down the stairs, burst through the door of the kitchen. Harry, sorry, Harry, sorry. Prabhupada's been ringing the bell for the last 10 minutes. You better go up. So I ran upstairs. I opened the door. And, of course, whenever we came into Prabhupada's room, we would offer our obeisances first, and then, you'd look up and see what Prabhupada wanted. I only got halfway down. I started to get down. And Prabhupada just blasted me like anything. I mean, he really shouted at me. I couldn't even get down. And he yelled at me, where is the prasadam? And so then I was trying to explain, well, it's almost ready, just another minute. I don't want your prasadam. Don't bring me any prasadam. And he was yelling at me. Anyway, I managed to persuade him that I could bring whatever was already done. Then when I brought it up, he was completely calm, peaceful, like it never had happened. He made his point, and then it was over. So needless to say, after that, I stayed in my room the whole rest of the day and didn't venture out unless Prabhupada called for me. Anyway, so cooking for Prabhupada was a bit of a trick. Especially that cooker, it had a particular knack to it, and in a minute we'll hear about my efforts to do that. But right now we're talking about different cooks, people that cook for Srila Prabhupada. So that was Harry Kesh. He was expert. Later on, somehow or another, he lost the knack when he rejoined the party in 1976. But before we read about that, there was one gentleman in Vrindavan. His name was Bhagatji, Vishvambar Dayal, and he used to live just around the corner in the back alley from the Krishna Balaram Mandir. Very, very nice man. He donated the land that our Gurukul in Vrindavan is built on. He gave a lakh of rupees, which was a lot of money in those days, for the construction. And he also was involved with the management, because we didn't know anything. When the Krishna Balaram Mandir opened in 1975, it was just filled up with, raw recruits. Actually, what happened was that there had been a small group of devotees, Punanava Prabhu and a few others, Saurabh, that had built the temple. And then, after when it was opened on Ram Navami, all of a sudden, there was, three big sets of deities, a full-on deity worship program, a guest house to run and everything. So Prabhupada told the GBCs that they had to give two men from each GBC zone. And those people would have to stay in Vrindavan and not go back to their countries. So, some people from here, actually, we had Back to Richard, who later on became Bhagavata Shraya, and Purnachandra. So, they got over for the festival, and we all had return tickets, and then they were suddenly told, sorry, you're not going back. Right? You're staying in India. And that was it. So, like that, about 50 devotees were just suddenly dropped, parachuted in, as they say, into the Vrindavan temple. And, they became the Vrindavan inhabitants there. So, nobody knew how to manage. We'd never been in India before. We didn't know how things worked. They were getting cheated left, right and centre. They were squandering money all over the place. They had no understanding of how everything worked. So Bhagatji was there, and he was the one who was advising us every day on how to manage properly. So he had a very, very close relationship with Srila Prabhupada. Whenever Prabhupada came, he could walk into Prabhupada's rooms any time, day or night. Prabhupada would sit with him, they would discuss about the management. And Prabhupada relied quite heavily upon him, actually. for training us up and for, you know, making sure that everything was run properly. So one of Bagaji's services, another one was that he loved to cook, and he was very expert in making roti, yeah, big ones, big thick ones. He used to call them his breads. Yeah. So whenever Prabhupada was there, he would come at lunchtime, and there was a little kitchen in Prabhupada's back garden. So whoever was his cook, they would cook in that kitchen, and then towards the about halfway through, Bhagatji would come, and then he would go in the kitchen. He already had the dough was already made up, and then he would set about making fresh hot chapatis for Srila Prabhupada. So this was April 8th, 1976 in Vrindavan. I've been learning how to make chapatis from Bhagatji, who Prabhupada said makes the best chapatis. They are thick but well cooked, and each one puffs up perfectly and tastes sweet. Every day he comes to cook for Prabhupada's lunch, stopping briefly to ask Srila Prabhupada what he would like to eat before entering the kitchen at the bottom of the garden. Prabhupada is encouraging me to learn in preparation for the next few months on the road. He said that he will personally show me how to use his three-tiered cooker. So by this time we'd already planned out where Prabhupada was going for the summer. Pushyakrishna had come on as Prabhupada's secretary, and this was April. On April the 18th we left India and we embarked on a four-month tour. So whilst we'd been in Mayapur after Harikesh had taken sannyas, then Nandarani was there, Dayananda and Nandarani. Nandarani was a good cook, so she cooked for about a month. Then when we got to Vrindavan, there were other ladies there that were expert, they were cooking. And then when we got to Bombay, somebody else was there, I think Kaushalya, she was there. So she cooked, but we knew that once we start traveling, there'll be just Srila Prabhupada, Pushyakrishna, and myself. Pushyakrishna couldn't cook, and I couldn't cook. So, you know, it was going to be a problem. So Prabhupada wanted me to learn, and he said that he would personally teach me how to use his cooker. So I tried in Mayapur with Harikesh, but I only got a couple of days in, and then, you know, that was it. He took off. So I didn't really learn anything. So from Vrindavan then, we went to Bombay. So April the 13th, 1976, Prabhupada showed us how to prepare lunch with his three-tier cooker today. Now, Pradyumna had just come up from South India to see Srila Prabhupada on Prabhupada's request, and he was told by Srila Prabhupada that he should join the party as the Sanskrit editor. So he had some things to do in India, but he stayed for about a week in Bombay until we left. So he and I, you know, we attended with Srila Prabhupada, and then he showed us how to make lunch using the cooker. Before his massage was finished, he got up and we went into the kitchen. He loaded up the cooker, putting dal in the bottom tier, rice in the middle, and the vegetables on top. He set the cooker on a low flame and had Pradyumna make some chapati dough. 35 minutes later, after his massage was complete, he came back into the kitchen, he chaunched the dal, spiced the vegetables, made some chapatis, and then ate. It was a simple, wholesome meal, expertly prepared with a minimum of fuss. We were fortunate to share his remnants, which to me tasted far better than usual, having been cooked by his own hands. I still remember that meal, you know, that Prabhupada himself made. It was just wonderful. It was simple, but I just read that it was so full of flavor, and I mean, it was really transcendental. So anyway, we were supposed to be learning, and I think it was 2 days running, he showed us how to cook. Prabhupada also had me collect the bitter leaves of neem and dry them in the sun on the roof. Today, after crushing the dried leaves, I filled a bag with the fine powder to take with us on the upcoming tour for use in cooking to stimulate and improve his appetite. So Prabhupada told me, so you get some neem leaves, just put them on the roof for a couple of, a few days, let them dry in the sun, and then you strip the leaves off the branches, powder them up and bring that with us. So I did do that, and we had it for about 4 months before we actually used it, but eventually Prabhupada did. Anyway, so that was it. We left, and the first stop was Melbourne. We came here on April the 19th. When we arrived, fortunately, Banu was here, Banu Maharaj nowadays. He was with the Nam Hatta party at that time, under Guru Kripa Swami, who had just become the new GBC in Australia. So he had some of his men stay here in the Australian temples, and he took some of the Australian Sankirtan men to Japan, where they were collecting very large amounts of money for Mayapur project. So Banu was here, and they also had this bus that they used to travel around the country on. So he was cooking in the kitchen, and Prabhupada called me in and he asked me to cook certain things for his breakfast. So I was cooking in the bus. So this was the day after we arrived, April the 20th. In addition to fruits and fried cashews that the local devotees had prepared for him, Prabhupada asked me to make two additional preparations. Vada, which is soaked dal mashed into a paste and then deep fried, and chira, spicy fried flat rice mixed with deep fried peas and potato cubes. And for convenience, I cooked in the Australian travelling Sankirtan bus. So Prabhupada was happy with that. I actually was a success in cooking these vada in a little like golf ball size, and also this chira, which I did with peas. I fry the peas and I dice up the potatoes very small and fry them, and then mix it all with red chili powder, black pepper, fresh cut chili and salt, and then just mix it all up, and Prabhupada actually liked it. So I got a little bit confident that I was actually going to be able to cook if it was ever needed. Whilst we were here, it wasn't needed. Banu Maharaj was a very expert cook, as he is with everything, and Prabhupada was happy with that. Then we left Melbourne and we flew to Auckland. So the situation in Auckland was a lot different. It was a small temple. It had been devastated by the defection of a large group of devotees in 1973. They'd gone off with what was the first splinter group from ISKCON. And so we just had a few devotees there, about 8 or 10. Yasamani Nandan Prabhu was the temple president at that time. And I'd been with the party, 4 or 5 months by that time, and I'd never been in a situation where I had to cook. There was always somebody there that was, a good cook, and so it wasn't a problem. We arrived in Auckland, there was nobody there. In the morning time, in the first morning, I went around looking for somebody to cook, and I couldn't find anybody. So then I kind of was shocked to realize that it was going to have to be me. So anyway, I was thinking, I've done these fried things for Prabhupada in Melbourne, so he showed me how to use the cooker in Bombay, and it can't be that difficult. that was my illusion. This was April the 27th, 1976. Since there are so few devotees in this temple, I got my first chance to cook for His Divine Grace today. I completely blew it. Much to Srila Prabhupada's disappointment and my own mortification. Using the cooker required much more expertise than I had thought. It seemed so easy when I had watched Srila Prabhupada make his meal in Bombay. I had everything prepared before the massage. I remembered to stop at the right time to put the cooker on the stove. But when I went back at the end of the massage, everything had turned to mush. I had left the flame on too high, and the vegetables, rice and dal were all way overcooked. With no time to prepare anything else, I had to serve it as it was. Needless to say, Srila Prabhupada was not happy. He could not understand how I had made such a mess, and he told me bluntly that I had no brain. I was too dull to learn, he said. But because there was nothing else available, he had to eat it. But it was a disaster that I don't hope to repeat. So I actually managed to find somebody in the afternoon, Ramdas's wife, Lakshmana. And she cooked the next day, and it was good. So, you know, I was spared from that. But I felt terrible because I knew how delicate Prabhupada's digestion was, and I cooked this stuff. It was inedible practically, but because there was nothing else available, he had to eat it. So anyway, from we only had a day and a half in Auckland, and then we went on to Fiji. In Fiji, you know, it's all Gujarati. And there was a whole army of ladies that turned up every day, you know, at least 20 of them, and they'd all be there, you know, cooking away, and you know, it was fabulous prasadam every day, so no problem there. And then we went on to Hawaii. So in Hawaii, there was a lady devotee, Kusha. She tried cooking for a couple of days, then she had problems. She had to go to hospital. And so, somehow or another, it fell to me to, you know, make my next attempt. So, this was on May the 6th, 1976 in Hawaii. Cooking for Srila Prabhupada has become something of a problem. After my disastrous attempt in New Zealand, I left it to the local devotees to make arrangements here. One of the girls, Kusha Dasi, tried for the first couple of days, but Prabhupada complained that she had used too much salt. Before I could speak to her personally, word got out, and then she became discouraged. So I was thinking, you know, Prabhupada told me she's using too much salt. So I was just going to tell her, you know, privately, just use less salt. Because I knew if it comes out, you know, somebody just hears, oh, you know, your cooking's no good, Prabhupada doesn't like it, and then she would get discouraged. So that's exactly what happened, unfortunately. Then suddenly, anyway, she was taken to hospital suffering from a bad infection. So yesterday, on the 5th, I had another go. It was another complete failure. And Prabhupada repeated his criticism that I am simply too dull to learn. So Prabhupada's digestion is so delicate that a constant change of cooks can mean serious health problems for him. In evident frustration at my incompetence, he asked for the three-tier cooker and some burners to be brought upstairs into his room, declaring that he would cook for himself. So that was Prabhupada's solution. It was just Prabhupada's mercy that, you know, he had a servant that couldn't cook, and cooking was one of the main functions of the servant. But instead of suggesting, all right, I have to get another servant who can cook, you know, he never even hinted that, you know, all right, well, you're not competent, and therefore I have to get somebody else to do the service properly. He just said, all right, bring up the burners and the cooker, and put them in my room here. That meant that he was going to cook for himself. So I was completely downcast that I was so useless that I couldn't even cook properly. So I told Sukadev Prabhu, who was the temple president at that time. So he immediately came up and he said, Srila Prabhupada, I can cook. Please let me try. So he was eager, you know, to have the service, and he actually was a good cook. So Prabhupada immediately consented. You know, after pushing me that now you bring the burners up, bring up the cooker, it's all right, I'll do it. Then immediately that Sukadev said, well, I can cook. Then Prabhupada said, good, very good. You do it. So he consented, and today's lunch turned out to Srila Prabhupada's satisfaction, except for the dal, which Sukadev had cooked down to a mush. Prabhupada said that it was untouchable. But that was his only complaint. And so Sukadeva is going to do it every day now. So he did in fact cook every day for Srila Prabhupada for the whole month. He managed to crack it with the dal. And Prabhupada was very happy with his efforts. Anyway, 2 days later then, on May the 8th, breakfast for Pushta Krishna Maharaj and myself consists of fresh mangoes, pineapples and halava. Srila Prabhupada is also enjoying fresh ripe fruits freely available in the neighborhood. Remarking on the delicious mangoes, he said that their juice could be boiled down and then dried in trays in the sun. He explained that this dried pulp then can be stored for many years, and when eaten with ground rice and milk, it is both palatable and nutritious. Prabhupada made a thorough inspection of the temple grounds the other day, and he was pleased to note a proliferation of flowers and vegetables, all conscientiously grown by the temple gardener, Kanvadas. Taking an interest in every aspect of his work, Prabhupada asked him many questions. He noticed a small chili bush at the side of the temple. So as he took his breakfast this morning, he sent me out to pick a few. There were very little, and I didn't think that they would be very strong. I had no idea. I didn't know anything about anything to do with cooking. I thought, if a chili's small, that means it's not very strong, and if it's big, it must be stronger, right? Because it's generally the opposite. So, I picked a few chilies. I came up. Prabhupada was still taking his breakfast, so I put them on the plate. Prabhupada took but a small bite of one, and then left it at the side of his plate. Several minutes later, he raised his eyebrows and he said, "It is very hot." So, concerned that it might be burning his mouth, I asked if it was too hot, but he simply smiled and said, "No, chili means hot." But he didn't eat any more of it. He only had the one bite. So there were super hot chilies. So later in the day, Prabhupada declared Sukadeva's cooking first class. I am relieved. He's not only using the 3-tier cooker to do dal, rice and bitter melon, but he also has another 6 pots going at the same time, from which he makes 3 wet and 3 dry subjis. Added to this is a very palatable lassi that is being made by one of the ladies, which his divine grace said was very good. So that was, a big relief. Sukadeva, got it together, made really nice prasadam, and Prabhupada was able to eat, in a very healthy way. So it's nearly 9 o'clock. We have to finish in time for the arati. Tomorrow, what's the program? Anybody know? I mean, Bhagavatam class in the morning. We'll be continuing with this.